that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Boogaloo! Welcome back, my friends, to Season 5 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo Astronauts. We are talking about space movies, and we have a new one for you this week, Battle in Outer Space. So, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadoo, happy to be with you today, and I am joined, as usual, by James Cotta.
Calling space control. Calling space control. This is SJ1.
SJ1. Ready? Not SJ2. You could always tell them because they had the number on them.
Right
everywhere. All right. And we got Crackjack, Macjack, Blackjack, Jumpin' Jack Hall.
Up, kittens.
And we also have Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations.
Okay, so we're here talking about some space battles. So Nick, tell us about Battle in Outer Space.
Well, in Battle in Outer Space, in the far, far future of 1965, I believe it was.
The future is so bright.
The future is so bright that aliens attack Earth. By using a freeze ray that negates gravity and take over one guy's mind for no apparent reason. So Earth gets his shit together and we launch a space force of 2 ships out to kick ass in outer space when we discover they have a base on the moon. And that's what happens in this movie.
Well, that is truly the extra Coles Notes version of the story.
But, not a lot happened in this movie, man.
I literally have
staring out a porthole in this movie, man.
I literally have written in my notes, there sure are a lot of meetings in this movie.
Oh my god.
There's a lot of people having to sit down and working things out.
There's almost as many endings as there is meetings. Because it feels like there's like 3 endings in the movie.
Oh yeah. After the moon battle, I thought for sure this movie was over.
Oh yeah.
I thought for also a hero's welcome.
And I thought, damn, you know, this movie's not so bad. And then the big space battle happens afterwards, and it's just like, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, no, I was getting ready for credits, and I was clicking it off, and went, wait, there's 20 minutes here. Is there something wrong with my recording?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that is the point, truly, where it does look like, and that is one of those big questions that I have to ask in this movie. Like, I don't know how much time they had between the moon battle and between the aliens coming back to fight them. But, yeah, so, like, Earth, with all its resources, could manage like 5 ships to throw at them at that point. And obviously they couldn't train the pilots. So.
I think the strangest thing for me is that at no point do the aliens actually seem that threatening. Like,
when you see them once, and they're like funny little aliens.
Yeah, they're, and in the moon battle.
Wait, I thought that was a different race.
I don't know.
I mean, it could be.
I thought those were moon men.
Sounds good to me.
Sure. because they were living in a freaking cave.
Yeah, that might make the movie better.
I'd argue against it if I could present any facts to refute it. but at one point in the moon battle, we've got ships coming in and stuff, and one of our human heroes, the guy that has been freed from control of the bad guys, of the aliens, because they can control one guy, as you noted, they can mind control one dude.
One guy at a time. Yeah.
again, like they're showing the level of fear that we should have of these aliens. They can control one guy.
Well, that scary voice, you know.
But he starts taking down the enemy ships with just a rifle, like. It's like a super weapon or something. It's just his regular rifle. So
it was the heat gun as well. I mean, they make a big point that this is new technology we didn't have before. It can shoot through Boromian Mobide 187, the hardest metal ever designed on Earth, which coincidentally we're making ships out of now.
but five ships. You know, like, we're not making a lot of ships, but we're making five.
I mean, they based a couple of them in Texas.
Well, there's Texas, Russia. And Russia and Japan. And I'm still amazed, like, which one of them only made one ship? That was probably Russia. But, like, you know, like, Texas made, I mean, there's next to no ships. And this big giant space battle at the end. It's like two Earth ships will fly by on the screen, and then 20 minutes later, two alien ships will fly by on the screen, and there's like lasers blasting, and everybody's missing everybody, except more Earth ships get destroyed than alien ships. It's they're never on screen at the same time, almost never on screen at the same time, blasting each other. So it's this very odd moment of like.
I actually thought that sort of symbolized that, you know. We have different nations. We can never get our shit together, right? To, you know, get a coordinated attack happen. I mean, if you watch that footage, no two ships launch the same way. If you're launching from a jam, they launch at an angle. If you're in Russia, they're straight up. In the U.S., they were coming at a freaking silo, which I thought was cool.
I think that's just bad continuity. I think... I don't think that was on purpose. I just think.
Describe the aliens' super weapon again. How did you describe that, Nick?
I believe it was a freeze ray that could somehow negate gravity.
And this leads to an incredibly earnest explanation of how gravity works that is based on how warm things are. Entirely based around whether things get chilly.
Oh my God.
Like, gravity stops working.
That right there, that's one of those moments where you want to stop the movie, go on to the website, the internet, and start actually learning about gravity, because whatever they're saying is not right.
They're in the middle of the explanation, and I'm like, you know, I don't think anyone knows how gravity works. I mean, we've got theories, but this can't be it. Like, I mean,
I actually thought they were freezing down to like the center of the Earth, the molten core somehow.
Go ahead.
It didn't quite explain why two of the bridges that they destroyed were taken out by water spouts, and the one bridge we actually saw was lifted up in its entirety.
Yeah, the explanation is that they're at absolute zero, the molecule, like the atoms, slow down, which makes gravity stop working on them.
I was too busy trying to figure out why attacking bridges was the most efficient plan.
They're mad at bridges. They are like. At one point, when they start like attacking the Earth, like en masse, at the denouement film,
en masse. I like that. Yeah, they're five ships.
Yeah, they're one of the targets they choose for the most effect to demoralize people is the Golden Gate Bridge, which would have like 100 people on it. Like, of all the things that they target, three things in the entire world, and that's one of the ones they pick. Because these guys hate bridges. Just that's the only explanation I have.
But it's the Golden Gate Bridge, so at least it's very recognizable.
Yeah, like I thought that destroying San Francisco in disaster films was a new thing, but apparently, yeah. Like I thought it was just because it happens now because all of the CG guys live in San Francisco, but
turns out no, it's just really recognizable.
It's tradition. Everyone's stealing from this.
Yeah, this is one of those movies. Now when we talked about Space Mutiny, you guys talked about how you were, like, got bored, stopped watching, and didn't do any, and like, you know, we're doing other stuff. This was that movie for me where I had to watch it over three sittings, and it was kind of like, is there something else I could be doing
Dan,
right now?
I am offended that you think that I can only get bored in one movie a season. Because this movie, I was just like, oh my God. Oh, they're still talking. Yeah. They're still talking. Speaking of talking, I'd like to know, how do you think that it is? Because this movie is tough to judge. Am I judging the movie or am I judging the Americanization of the movie? What am I supposed to be judging this Boogaloo wise on? Anybody have an idea or an opinion?
I think it's, you know, objective. You judge it on what the hell you want to judge it on.
Because the Americanization is makes this far more Boogaloo.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It definitely has some of that. Like, let's throw in a couple of American speakers so that we can sell this. Like, this is the same director as Godzilla, so it does have that. Like, we can get extra bucks if like you jam in an American character, as we've seen already this season. But again, it's an announcer. Like in Godzilla, it's, you know, Raymond Burr that they shot new footage with and made him a reporter. In this, it's like, you know, in this, they don't even go that far. They have a reporter at the very beginning of it, and then we never see him again until like 2/3 of the way through the film.
And I love when they do that. It's just like, oh, and here is our American reporter telling you about the information. It's like, oh, thank you so much for presenting us with the American reporter who's going to give us no new news.
I actually thought the film sort of sped up once we got to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't slow down.
I suppose that's true.
It is interesting to me. It's 1959, so it's like right as like a Sputnik would have been. It was 58 or 59, right? So it's pre the American space program, but less than 10 years before the moon landing would happen. And the vision that they have of the moon is like, it's so like, wow. So specific to that window of but they're actually not terribly far off, except for their understanding of how weightlessness works, which is apparently you're either like a helium balloon or, as long as you pay attention to it, totally fine.
Totally fine. Yes.
Yeah, there is like that. That seems there's.
Yeah, no, that was there's that the, was weird.
There's
Explain
the guy
that scene.
So like they get into outer space and they had been warned about weightlessness and, you know, be careful. And one, like, everyone stands up and they're totally fine. There's no effect of the weightlessness, except one guy stands up and then just floats up to the ceiling. And they're like, hey, you got to be careful because of weightlessness. And he's like, oh, I really do. And then that's it. It doesn't have another effect on him until later on in the movie, he forgets about weightlessness again and starts to float away. So as long as you're paying attention.
Oh yeah, because these guys are just tromping around the moon. Like, oh man, there's no problem. Oh, this is a different ground.
Tromping. They were driving in style.
that moon rover was awesome.
That Oscar Mayer Wienermobile was. I mean,
that's exactly what it looked like. That's awesome. You're right.
You know, this is the time when we should mention that there was a discussion about whether or not moon rovers should be part of this season's secret modifiers, And then the argument was, well, what are the odds it even shows up? And Jim was like, of course it's going to show up. And we're like, nah, Jim, we don't need that. That's not a good one.
Hey, and, that would not be that's not a space dune buggy. That right there is not a space dune buggy. That was created on Earth.
We'll never know how the judges would have scored that. We'll just never know. I do love that they have a neat when they land on the moon, they have a neat elevator thing that gets them out of the ship.
They have like two things. Like they have an elevator, and then they come down. Like two or three people come down in the elevator. And then everybody else comes down in the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
But I mean, they actually thought that part through, which I really like. Like, how do you like a classic '60s, like '50s style, like three pointed rocket ship lands? Like, how the hell do you get out of that stupid thing? I mean, sort of the Bugs Bunny long ladder that you shove on the side. Like, how do you get out of it?
Which actually they also had, because there is the point where the guy who's hearing voices, when he comes out after out of the ship that he winds up blowing up, he comes down, he slides down a ladder, which is the Bugs Bunny ladder. So yeah, you really do have everything.
I was actually impressed with the earnestness they played those scenes. Because, yeah, you know, in a movie like this, I'm expecting camp, and I actually thought, you know, they're playing this like it's a real thing. Like, they're trying to explain all their technology. Sure, some of it's a little bit kooky, but it's the 60s, and they haven't really discovered, you know, what would really happen yet. There's a little bit of imagination there, but...
Yeah, you know, like, I think that's what's interesting, too.
They seem to have a rank and file, you know, they listen to a commander in chief. They're out to save the Earth, and it's a ragtag force
of humans from every nation.
Of humans from every nation, yes. Who all appear to be Japanese.
I also love that when the bad guys are approaching on the moon, they know the bad guys are coming because the barometer shows the atmospheric change.
and so then they can use their awesome what is that like air puffs system to travel, which I guess helps them go faster. it's a very interesting system, because it's like, wow, so the bad guys brought air to the moon. Good work.
Really explain how we discovered that there were aliens on the moon, like that they had a base on the moon to attack us?
Did the aliens say early that they were doing that? Because that's the only thing that I can think. Because otherwise, yeah, the humans just kind of figured out, oh, they're on the moon.
they do have an explanation for it. It's in one of the 413 talking about it. But they do bring it up. If you spaced out, I don't know why you weren't riveted.
One of the several team meetings that they have, organizational meetings that they have leading into this. I have a question about the technology involved. One of the plot points, as we mentioned, the aliens have a massive power that enables them to take over the mind of one guy. but they pick the guy that's going to be on the space mission, and then they get him to sabotage the mission.
Earlier, I think it was like the Iranian delegate or something like that.
Yeah, they control one guy earlier on trying to sabotage things on the ground. That fails. Then they take over one other guy because they can do one guy at a time. Terrifying aliens, these guys. So he's sabotaging the ships, and then, you know, the ship then has to be fixed later. But from what I can tell, the entirety of human technology for space involves randomly turning valves left or right.
That's true.
That are unmarked, because that's all he does to sabotage it, and it's all they do to fix it. is just turn unmarked vowels.
Hey, stop turning that off.
There are multiple vowels there.
Everywhere there's vowels. There's like a whole row. There's like 20 of them in a row. He picks one to turn. He turns it a whole bunch of times to the right. And then the other guy goes, oh, no. When he comes back, he turns it a whole bunch of times to the left. Like, that is the entirety of technology that runs space travel.
Yeah. I'm just amazed. I was just amazed with like if we have this technology, why are we waiting until aliens show up to go out there? Like we had some crazy technology in 1965.
Because Earth couldn't get it together, man.
Yeah, we needed the nations to unite in a single cause.
Uh huh.
Come on, man.
Jeez. I guess we could do apparently anything.
Isn't that the so Independence Day stole from us? All right. Really, we're getting that the DNA nice. of sci-fi from the 90s.
All science right fiction. Yeah. All science fiction.
Yeah, it goes back to these eight movies.
Battle in Outer Space.
The eight movies we're covering this season are the ur-text for the root, the source material for every other sci-fi movie we have ever seen.
One thing I will say is that they had the exact same space missiles in this movie as they did in Battle Beyond the Stars. Like glowing reddish orb things that, you know, they look pretty much exactly the same. So,
I got a question on filmmaking. Pertaining to this.
So do they.
Maybe they have a bunch of questions. And this, you know, I don't think I've seen, I definitely haven't seen as many Toho films as Nick has, probably not as much as the rest of the guys either. So the Doomsday Weapon involves all of the buildings kind of being shattered and then the pieces flying up into the sky. How did they shoot that to get that weird effect of like things falling upward?
Upside down.
Is it upside down?
It's upside down in a tank of water.
In a tank of water. I wouldn't have. I thought about upside down, but I never would have thought about the tank of water.
So not a really powerful vacuum cleaner then.
See, I thought it could have been a fan underneath. If it was right side up, it could have been a fan blowing the pieces up. Wow, neat. See, you learned something.
Well, they do a nice job with that kind of thing, and I mean that's their bread and butter is figuring out those kind of elements. And there's no question that is my favorite looking part of the movie when they're destroying all the buildings and you get to see the destruction because that something's actually happening, which I enjoy.
I kind of like the heat ray. I mean, the lasers, they didn't stop. I mean, they were an actual ray that they could like swing around and cut through stuff rather than, you know, just a pistol with a glorified laser bullet coming out of it.
Well, you know? And I like the ships too, because the ships have rockets in all the directions. So you could actually, again, see it being able to land in various ways.
And I thought the tactics of the aliens trying to defeat our good guys on the moon were actually quite good, trying to bring down the mountain on top of them rather than trying to hit them directly.
Agreed, yeah.
Somebody put some thought into the logistics of this. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that there's a technical level that...
I'm kind of wondering why we brought the girl around. She was obviously there just to make sandwiches or something.
She was the communications person. You know, why she came on the mission, not completely sure, but why they sent her into the cave, I'm really not sure of. It's like, oh, you go on ahead. It'll be fine.
I really, you guys really thought those were like the aliens that were attacking? I really thought those were moon men.
Totally thought they were the aliens.
Well, yeah, of course.
I'm positive they were the aliens.
You know, like, why?
I thought they were just little moon rapists or something hanging out.
Well, I mean, hey, in that case, I actually want to see the movie, you know, where there's like, those are the actual moon men. Like, let's go back and figure out what the hell's going on with them, because they're wacky.
Little Moon Rapist does sound like a film that happened. Like that. Sounds like a movie that exists, rather than something we just...
We could pitch it to Corman.
If he still has
making,
time.
Still making movies. Still making movies.
In his 90s, still making them.
Yeah. All right. Are we ready to go into scoring here?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
I see no reason why we shouldn't.
Jack hasn't spoken in 20 minutes, so we're
probably ready. Apparently there's no good facts for this movie. It's like...
There's really very few. The trivia on this is really actually pretty poor. Unfortunately.
So is the movie.
All right. Well, speaking of so is the movie, we rate each film in our search for the ultimate B movie. We rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. Our first category is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Yeah, there's an odd moment where I kind of came to the realization that that unless you're watching a Godzilla movie, all the Toho movies are very much the same. And once you start watching Godzilla, they're all the same, just with Godzilla. So it's like I enjoy them, but this was not my favorite of them. So it was a little more boring than schlocky. I'm just going to give it a 4.
I'm going with a 5 on this one. It's an American Japanese co-production. With the big Columbia sign out front and one American actor. So that's enough to get it a 5. But other than that, I have a tough time seeing anyone voluntarily watching this one outside of the drive-in theater.
And you know, it's actually a fairly well thought of movie. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
So I guess
well, it would have been awesome if we could have skipped the first 40 minutes.
And I also wonder,
like, fan edit time.
When we're looking at it,
I'm going to cut down to just the meetings.
When we're looking at it, I mean, I kept on looking at it and looking at these special effects and the miniature work, and I'm like, they're really trying. But it's every time I look at them, I'm like, that looks like toys. And I'm thinking it's not even good for the era. But when I looked back and was looking for trivia on the film, generally the people praise those special effects, and that's kind of amazing to me. Like because I think they don't look that good. Every single time I look at them, I go, "Oh, that's a fake looking toy special effect." Like looks like something you would do like if you're making a movie when you were like 1990s video camera teenager in high school. This is all he could do. I got off on a. What are we judging?
Schlock appeal.
Entirely. Know, the first this is category. Miniatures.
The schlocky miniatures, yeah.
I got a certain earnestness to it, so I'm going to give it a 5.
Well, I like that. I mean, I think the Toho part, like the Toho-ish parts, the Toho-esque. I like the miniatures work, but that's kind of all it offers me. So 5 as well. Our next category is more heart than budget.
Tough one. It's a Toho movie. It really is. They put as much into it and more meetings. If we were rating this on the number of meetings, it would score very high. But for this, I'm just gonna go with a 4.
You know what? I'm going to go with a 6. I do think there's a certain earnestness about this whole movie. Some of it may be lost in our translation of it. The schlocky Americanization stuff, the bad English dubbing and like that. I think that may hurt this film in some ways. So, that's as high as I can go.
No, I think they really tried. They tried with those. Like, this movie has a ton of special effects shots. It's just that the special effects look like crap. But the entire stuff on the moon with the transport ships and this and that, like, they're really trying. They just don't know they're making something terrible.
I really enjoyed the Weenie Mobiles. I'm sorry. I thought that looked real.
I liked most of them, but...
I thought the only thing that looked real was the mat work, the mat paintings and stuff. I thought that was great on the moon in different areas. But other than that, like, it didn't work for me at all. But I really think they tried hard. They just didn't know that they were failing in what they were doing. So I'm going to give it an 8.
All right. I think the moon stuff is really strong. I think there's a lot of wandering before we get to the moon. So I'm only going to give this a 4. Our next category is what the fuck moments.
All right. Well, we talked about it earlier because I marked down a few things because otherwise I would have truly forgotten them in this case. But the gravity situation, that came out of nowhere when the one guy, oh my God, you're going to save me. I'm floating. And then he does it again. And like that moment, it was just this extremely odd, like nobody else talks about gravity. If you cut that out, nobody would miss it, other than the fact that it was the only funny part in the movie. The aliens were, I definitely found to be a little what the fuckish, because they, as you say, Nick, like they could have just been moon men. But finally, the one thing, like when they go up into space to battle the aliens, what I loved, and maybe it's just me, was the fact that they all pulled down their dark visors. And it's like, this is space. It's dark. Where is the like, are you flying directly into the sun that you need to put down your dark visor?
We hadn't been in space at that point. We didn't know. In fact, we still have, I'm pretty sure Stanley Kubrick watched these sets before he filmed the moon landing in the 60s. So...
But so the visors to me seemed a little what the fuckish. But with all that, I'm only going to go with a 4.
I'm going to go with a 3 for different reasons. For the hats, the second time I've given an award this season for hats. are these astronauts, with the exception of the one guy with the Elvis hair, they saw his hair and went, "No, you don't get a hat." They're wearing some condom hats in this thing that are spectacular. Also the weenie mobiles. I mean, I may actually love the design and like that, but I mean, did they have to paint them the Ostermeyer Meyer colors? Cause that's all I can see when I look at them, but I like the design. Like, yeah, that could have been believable in that era. But once they paint them yellow and red, I just can't do it. And I mean, space rapists. I mean,
talk about putting, you know, like, I mean, I don't even know
if they were rapists. They were just little guys with their hands out. yeah. It's the hands out thing and the rubber suit. It always makes me think rapists. I don't think they ever undressed her though. So while they were in space, they really couldn't. So maybe they were just like space molesters of some sort.
I can now picture this movie being held up in a Me Too moment. Did you give it a score there, Nick?
Oh, I think I said a 4.
Did you? Okay. All right. See, we talk about, I think this movie has so many WTFs, but we talk about the quality of them, and because the first, like, 52 minutes or whatever this movie is, so damn boring. The WTFs don't mean anything. You're just like, just do something. So even though they're happening, they're not, you're just ignoring them. They're not. So we talk, it's like the quality of WTFs, but there's definitely some good ones in here. I like, for instance, I would love to know, like, we talk about, are we judging the movie or the Americanization? Like, how they decided which Japanese character would get an American accent and which one would get a completely racist Japanese accent.
Yeah, there are several that have completely racist Japanese accents, yes.
Like some of these characters are, they're Japanese, clearly Japanese, but they sound like an American, and other ones have the most racist Japanese accent you can imagine. On the moon, there was a couple of good ones. I do love when they're running away back to their ship at the moon, and they're on the moon though. So you can see the director said to the actors, "Run like you're in outer space and you have no gravity, but like you're running really fast." So they have this exaggerated slow motion, but trying to imitate running real fast run going on. And their hips and their whole bodies are moving at like this exaggerated pace. And it just looks hilarious. I rewound and watched that like 6 times. It was just so awesome.
Well, it did actually feel like the movie was occurring in slow motion at certain points.
But it was hilarious. Clearly they just were acting in slow motion. They had no idea how to simulate what space run would look like. So they're trying to look like they're moving fast, and yet they're in slow. It's awesome. And then there was the guy who was we talk about the pilot who was taken over. And again, this is maybe part of the Americanization, but he was taken over. And afterwards, when he regains his senses and he sacrifices himself, shooting at the aliens with his rifle, while everybody else makes it to the ship. And he's wishing them like and saying goodbye to them. And he's the happiest guy I've ever heard who's dying and sacrificing his life. He's like, bye, everyone. I'll see you. Bye. I wish you happiness. Good luck. And I'm just going, nope. I wish you happiness was the one that got me rolling on the ground laughing. So it's got some good ones, especially in that latter half. So I'm going to give it a 6.
It does have, I think the WTF for me that stuck out is this part of the Americanization. So we see the first couple of attacks, and then we get news reports that more attacks have happened around the world. And so you have an American reporter and then they show some footage, and then it shows an Italian reporter, and they show some more footage. But instead of changing voices, the American reporter gives his report, and then when the image switches to the Italian reporter, the American reporter is still talking. He says, "While you are hearing my voice, the announcer in Italy is telling his audience."
Right.
I just love that. Like, it was just like it, just the goofiness of that. I'm only gonna give this a 3, though. I don't think there wasn't enough that leapt out at me.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, if you want,
I was just gonna say, I can't believe we didn't mention that. You know, we've got a mind control guy on the craft, and they just leave him behind.
Well, he volunteered to cover their exit. You know, okay. Which, you know, because now I'm obsessed with how every movie has ripped off.
I kind of thought they should tie him.
That's the ending of Armageddon.
I did find myself thinking about Armageddon a lot during this movie.
Oh, Armageddon has some boogaloo. Oh my god.
Armageddon owes a fair bit to this movie. So
a big budget boogaloo could have had Armageddon in it for sure.
All right, Stan, memorable moments.
Well, this one, with the exception of maybe the gravity scene and the Oscar Mayer wiener and perhaps the Moon Man, I seriously doubt that I am going to remember very much from this movie, other than it's just like, yeah, there was a Toho movie that I watched that had some miniatures and like aliens were going to try to take over the Earth. I won't remember much from this, so I'm just going to go with a 3.
I enjoyed your score there, just on the basis of, other than the parts I'm going to remember, this movie is completely forgettable.
I figure there's 3 points that I'm going to remember, so I gave it a 3. That seems totally reasonable to me. I'm not going to completely forget that I watched it, probably. But I'll leave room open for in case I do.
I can't go higher than a 4. This is pretty generic stuff, and I don't think I'll ever get through the talking bits again to watch the whole thing again.
No, so, I want Jim to make a fan edit if we're ever going to watch it again and cut it down to like the 20 minutes of usable footage, and then that'll be good.
Totally giving you just the meetings.
Enjoy the meetings, bitches.
Battle in Outer Space Planning Committee.
well, that would probably be a 40-minute movie. But...
Who's from what I hear, actually, that's what Shin Godzilla is.
Jack Hall.
Oh.
What? Something happened?
Two. I'm trying to remember something to say.
Trying to remember what movie we're talking about now. So one. crazy concepts, Dan.
Aliens attacking the Earth. Well, that's not very crazy at all. The fact that it had three endings to it, that's a little more crazy. So I'm gonna go with a four.
Yeah, I'll go with a five. I think at this time period, it was fairly novel, although there were examples of this type of movie before, but I can't think of one made in Japan. So, yeah. So, four.
Three? I can't. This is like these two categories are tough to judge on this one. I just know that they don't score high.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't even think this is the first Toho space movie. So
no, I don't think so.
So I'm only going to go with the two in this category. And every season we have six secret modifiers. This film has none of them. I don't typically do this, but one of the modifiers is space talk, and I want to run through how terrible the space talk is in this movie before we close things up. So the heat ray gun is called the heat ray gun. and I wrote down five instances. Start space procedures, use the space scope, fire a space torpedo, use the space radar, and go to the space terminal.
All in like space exploration vehicle one and space exploration vehicle two. Like
it is the worst space talk of any movie we've seen this season. All right, which
hey, we put no quality modifier on this modifier.
We did. We put a quantity. You had to have three. I decided none of those qualify because it's just putting. And I got hassled a couple episodes ago for just putting space in front of stuff, and that's all this movie does.
It's true. It's very true.
All right, which gives us a grand total of 40.5 out of 100, putting it in the bottom five of movies we've done so far in our search for the ultimate movie.
You know what? This season so far, I went into the season thinking we may get five or six movies to challenge Ninja 3. And so far, we haven't had our Boogaloo. Now, I think we got, especially the last one of the season, I think we got a chance still to bring out a serious contender. But it's been a little surprising to me that I would have thought space would have been ripe for the Boogaloo contenders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've managed the weirdest thing is that we've managed to find good movies.
that was the
really good
one,
movies. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Yeah, and how do we make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, that's the best question. Like, because we started out with Star Crash, and that looked like everything was going to set it up perfectly. And then it flips between boring, good, boring.
And is Star Crash actually the highest scoring episode of the season yet?
I don't have that in front of me, honestly.
I think it is.
I think it is. And I think it was like late, high 60s. And I thought, oh, good start. We're going to go up from there. And so far, not yet. So that's actually a real, a real surprise.
Star Crash 71.5 for 71. Star Crash, and then Space Mutiny 68.5. So over there,
I really think, much lower think than we're that. Just recovering from Space Rage.
That's fair.
Brought us so low that we had to go up.
We're still angry about Space Rage. Yes.
Feeling rage over Space Rage. Yeah.
I understand it. Okay. All right. Jim, why don't you tell the folks where to find us on the internet?
All right, we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric.
Because they found this.
find the rest of what we do. For Facebook and Twitter, follow our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. And we are searching for the Ultimate B-Movie. I mentioned the Octagon, which is the running chart that has all of the films, what they ranked in each of the five categories, as well as their grand total. And every Octagon, you can click on the name of the movie, and it takes you to the episode where we talk about that movie. So that is on WeTalkPodcasts.com.
See, Nick, or Jack, what we're doing is we're actually promoting We Talk Podcasts for the fact that they let us host our podcast on their site. That's more what we're doing here. See?
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah. Good. True those guys, in my opinion.
Good folks over there.
That's
thought I understood the relationship, but now that you've explained it, I really, really don't.
you don't have to worry about that. We talk to them, so you don't have to. All right. Well, next up, we continue our outer space journey by moving into Flash Gordon. So this one should be a step in the right direction. I'll admit, I've never seen it, so I am looking forward to sitting down and finally watching it.
Yeah, that explains a lot. You said Flash Gordon without a that's the way you have to say it. Flash Gordon.
I did not know that going in. Nick, I'm assuming you've seen it.
I watched the hell out of that sucker a couple times.
Jack?
I'm going to watch it again, though.
I saw it during second grade birthday party, 8 years old. So it's been a long time.
And not since. Not since.
Not since.
I have never made it through the movie, so I'm really intrigued. I have tried a couple of times because I have friends that absolutely love it, but I'd never made it through the whole film.
It is a well-loved cult classic.
No yeah, question. So. This is into a new realm for us. We haven't done a whole lot of like full on cult classic movies.
Yeah, that's right.
And the last ones that we're gonna do, both of them are cult classics. So,
it should be a lot of fun. All right. Well, unless anybody has anything else to add, and I pray that you don't, join us next week for Flash Gordon next episode. So thank you for watching season 5 Astronuts. So, for Jack, for Jim, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Rises high in the air. An ocean liner leaps out of the Suez Canal. World scientists determine secret space weapon is diabolical degravitational freeze ray.
It is clear from an examination of the circumstances resulting from these three disasters that there was a common force at work in each instance. The fact that the survivors were severely frostbitten is of particular significance. By rapidly lowering the temperature of a certain object, its gravity would also be decreased.
Space saboteurs seize control of Earthmen's minds by radio thought waves, penetrate secret councils, shatter Earth's defenses. Earth's only hope of survival, revolutionary spaceships and heat ray cannon. As Allied Earth Army launches interplanetary counterattack.
We warn you, do not approach the moon. If you do, you will surely die.
See Earth's rocket commandos surprise space invaders on the moon. Bombard base of war saucer armada. See beautiful Earth girl overpowered by fiendish spacemen. See Allied commander, brain captive of the enemy, destroy his army's last hope of escape. See space-shaking last battle of Earth rockets versus flying saucers as Space War One pits Earthmen against planetmen in a death struggle for survival.